Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd. Dave, you're going to be a guest on my show today. I want to thank everybody who's been listening. We've had some great calls. Obviously, the Pirates have been the front and center story in Pittsburgh as we have the 1 month of 12 where the football season kind of takes things off. So for those who want to get involved and hear this before 4 o'clock, Dave and I will be doing a piece on 970 on ESPN this afternoon. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. 19 days until Steelers report to Latrobe. So we're counting it down. And, you know, once that hits, I've been able to enjoy a lot of these Pirates games lately, but that's going to come to a screeching halt here.
Yes.
In about 19 more days. So I'm living up, rooting for the first place Bucks right now.
We're just rolling along. What episode did we say this was? Season two,
123.
So we're 19 days away. We're probably going to get in about four or five more of these. We'll finish with about 130 in our second season, and we'll start season three on July 25th or right around that date. And we'll move to, we're going to move our schedule to 3 days a week, or depending on how things go, we're going to have updates from training camp. I'm still working on the exact schedule of what days I'm going to be up there, but it looks like the good fellows at Clear Channel are going to get me up there a fair bit. So I'm going to hopefully be involved pretty intimately in what's going on with the Steelers from day one.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do, you know, we usually like to start the three podcast a week stuff, maybe around once the preseason games start. I think during training camp, though, like last year, usually had, you know, a beat writer or now you for 15 or 20 minutes in the evening to kind of give a daily wrap of things for nearly every day of the training camp. So there might not be long podcasts to go through. We might schedule just one, you know, long podcast, but people can expect during training camp that we'll have something probably nearly every day, maybe about 15 or 20 minutes worth, even if that means me flying solo. But hopefully you'll be able to get out there and be some eyes and ears and kind of wrap up some questions that I might have even, during training camp.
Absolutely, and I think as well, hopefully get some player interviews, get some commentary, whether we actually play them or not isn't quite as important as, you know, just hearing what they have to say. But we'll all have some recording devices there, and we'll figure out whether we want to play them or I can just kind of recap them. But, yeah, it should be fun. Looking forward to it. Hopefully it's not 100 degrees up there every day because the weather here has been hot and steamy, but it is what it is, and that'll be good fun. Dave, let's get some of the administrative stuff for the league out of the way, the salary cap stuff. There's some credits that are making the transition a little easier for teams, and they're set up a certain way. Can you explain that to us and what's going on with the cap?
Yeah, and I think this caused a little bit of a stir. I think it was, July 1st, Brian McIntyre on NFL.com released the most current available cap spaces of teams. And the Steelers he has listed as $3,700,000. A little over that in cap space. And the question that I still have, and I'm still trying to get this answered, is, you know, when the new CBA came about as kind of a mechanism to get people to the new TV money, which kicks in 2014, they had these things called the veteran credits. Now, last year, and I posted about this pretty extensively, you know, last year, and probably need to post about it again pretty soon. Last year, teams had three $1 million credits at their disposal, which they could use for veteran players. And basically, that was $1 million cap discount for three separate players is exactly what it was. So the Steelers used that last year. That's borrowed from future cap money. which, you know, you're going to have to pay the piper at some point on that. But this year, the mechanism is $3.5 million veteran credits. So that's $1.5 million laying out there. I do not believe that that's been applied yet because, not every team has to use it. And B, you know, you don't know possibly you know which veterans might be on the 53-man roster which you'll use it on. So that $3.7 million in all likelihood is probably in the neighborhood of $5.2 million, and that better matches the numbers that I have and have been accounting for on SteelersDepot.com in the cap space. Of course, the Steelers had a $500,000 credit for unused cap space last year that teams are allowed to roll over this year. There's that Dallas Redskins salary cap violation, so to speak, that I think totaled out about $1.6 million that I've accounted for, and I believe NFL.com is accounting for that as well, too. So don't get caught up in that $3.7 million because I believe it to be actually around $5.2 million. The reason to freak out is people look at that number and say, oh, my God, how are we going to get Mike Wallace signed? And we've covered this 100 times. That first year of Mike Wallace's contract, you got to remember that $2.74 million is already counting against the Steelers' salary cap because of the tender that they put on him. As soon as you place that tender, that automatically counts against the team's salary cap. So when you look at that, plus the available cap room, plus what a first year of his contract would likely end up being, assuming the Steelers reach a long-term deal with him, there's still plenty of room to work with. And then on top of it, you got Jonathan Scott out there, which you could clear, you know, $2 million worth of cap room on. So, you know, don't get caught up in that number. It's just all a matter of perspective of looking at them and what the actual number includes and does not include when you're looking at those. So I hope that clears up a little bit of that $3.7 million number that NFL.com has up.
Right. And we'll get into that. And the Steelers, you know, we see that guys write, some of the beat writers, I know the guys in ESPN pay attention to this, teams close to the cap, and we'll keep you posted on that as we get closer to camp. And as, you know, as things happen, as the Steelers juggle the end of the roster, the Steelers are still at 89, Dave. They have not added a 90th guy yet, have they?
No, still plenty of room for Max Starks.
Still plenty of room for Max. All right.
Speaking of which, you know, serious, Pat Kerwin and them were a lot of people don't like Pat Kerwin, but I really do. I mean, guy, former insider, with the Jets and worked on, you know, in their front office and all like that. They theorized a couple places that Max could end up, and I really could see it, especially when you look at the depth of, say, the tackle position for the Baltimore Ravens, and we're fixing to talk about the Bengals and the Browns offensive line. The Browns are not deep at all at the tackle position. There's a few teams. You throw in Atlanta to the mix, maybe the Eagles into the mix. I think Max, you know, I think Max is not going to have a problem finding a job, whether it be, right at the start of a training camp or maybe 3 or 4 weeks into the preseason, right before the season starts. The key thing is, and this is what Kevin Colbert says, he's got to get healthy first. And we talked about the health of Max Starks earlier this week on the podcast, and he seems to be getting close. So it all comes down to him and when he's ready and when he's cleared by the doctors.
I know you got a special love for Max, but I'm not sure it's going to be easy for him to have a job. I mean, obviously, he went into last season without one. So, he's a year older, and he's coming off a knee injury. So, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting Max Starks isn't playing in the NFL this year. But we'll see. We'll see. Like we said, we hope he doesn't play with the Steelers because that means good things about Mike Adams. But, you know, put the best guys you have out there, and if Mike can't get it done, Max Starks might be the second best guy they can turn to. So
even if he's healthy from a depth perspective, I just think that's the way to go, especially what he's likely to cost. And I disagree. I think he's going to be on an NFL roster at some point this year. And the main reason I want him back with the Steelers is because of the experience that he brings. He's a good locker room guy, too, by all accounts. And I just think they really could use him from, you know, in place of Jonathan Scott.
Just makes me wonder then why they haven't done it yet.
Well, I mean, he's not healthy. I mean, are you going to sign a guy that's not passing his physical yet? you know.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough point. So we'll see. As always, we'll see how it plays out. So, Dave, let's. The John Clayton has a thing that I hadn't heard that you told me today, where this is one of those things you can take with a grain of salt because this is John Clayton making something up that's conversational. And I guess he's got a kind of a theory of 150 for the offensive line.
Yeah, he does. And this is the first time. I don't know. I'm 40 something years old. I might have heard of it before.
I'm thinking he made it up. I've never heard.
But it's called the theory of 150. You can read about it on Kevin. Kevin Seifert has a post up on ESPN.com in the NFC North section of that site. He states if teams let its offensive line exceed the total age of 150 years for five starters, the clock is ticking on its remaining success. He points back to, well, he says...
Dave, just to jump in, I mean, I don't find that particularly insightful, but, I mean, we've seen some great offensive linemen in their late 30s, and the Steelers have had great offensive linemen in their late 30s. I mean, this just seems to be, well, if you got a bunch of old guys, you got a bunch of old guys. It's the NFL. But, you know, the one place where old guys actually do reasonably well is the offensive line.
Well, he points to the Chicago Bears after their Super Bowl year, and he supposedly has researched this. I might look into this a little further before training camp, but NFC North team, he basically that exceeds the limit to Detroit Lions. He states even though they drafted Riley Reiff there, whose five starters total 152 years old. I believe the Ravens this year. In the piece that I did on them, they're over the 150 mark this year. When you look at the guys that should be on their starting five this year. So, I think it's just a number, but when you add up these guys and now you could, are you going to have two guys that are 40? Push that number? No, but when you look at if most of your guys like the Ravens, who are over 30 years old, it is a concern. And, when's the last time the Steelers really pushed that number, I guess,
Well, I guess it's a concern, but, generally you're going to have guys. Yeah, it's a concern because guys are old. But, when the Steelers were playing with an offensive line that they were playing with in the 70s when they had Mansfield and Kolb and Sam Davis, I'm sure those guys were all over 30 years old,
Yeah, but that's a different era, too, now. I mean.
Okay, well, how about, when the Titans had Munchak and, blah, blah, blah. And I can't list everybody's offensive line, but, with the Vikings with some old offensive lines. We've seen good – look. The deal is you're at your physical prime and you're in your, mid to older 20s. And when you hit 30, you're getting older. I don't think this is, I don't want a receiving core where the four guys are over 29 years old. I just don't know what's insightful about this.
He's just pointing to the age factor as being the clock is ticking on its remaining success. I mean, that's a pretty obvious when you break down the whole thing, it's a pretty obvious observation.
Well, right, that's what the people have been saying about the Steelers' defense for the last 2 years, and they're rotating guys out and getting younger guys. It is. Okay, old guys, if you got a lot of old guys, you better think about getting some young guys. There we go.
Yeah, and the Steelers, thank God, have done that. And I pointed this out. I mean, I think that's the biggest question mark on the Ravens in my piece on the offensive line on them is, look, if that starting five stays healthy – I think they're going to be a good offensive line. I mean, look what that offensive line did to the Steelers last year, especially in week one of the season, ran all over them. Bryant McKinney, I mean, this guy will be 33 in September. His weight's going to be an issue. Matt Burke had varicose veins fixed in his leg. He turns 36 this month. Bobby Williams, the guy they acquired from the Bengals, is no spring chicken. He'll turn 36 in September. When you look and the point I want to make on that was, hey, I mean, yeah, they are a veteran unit. And if this veteran unit can stay healthy, I think they'll be fine. If they don't, their depth is very, very suspect behind them. And kind of playing off that into my other two, I've had a look at the Cincinnati and the Cleveland Browns offensive line. And, looking at the Cincinnati offensive line, David, I like what I see. They drafted Zeitler, they traded down in the first round in April and picked up Kevin Zeitler, who I think's a plug and play right guard. He's going to have, like DeCastro, he's going to probably have his early season kind of miscues and all like that. Kyle Cook at center, not the, not going to be known as one of the best centers in the league, but certainly serviceable and smart and heady and a guy that can get things done. Whitworth, probably one of the most underrated left tackles in the league, in my opinion. Andre Smith is finally starting to come into his own, one of the former first-round draft pick. And they went out and they signed Travell Wharton. The Panthers, of course, let him go, I think, back in March there. And he's going to take over at left guard for them. So I think their starters are good. And where the Bengals also are looking good is in their depth, David. They have Anthony Collins and Dennis Rowland back again. Two guys that have playing experience to back up both of the tackles positions. Interior-wise, not the best. Clint Bowling, the kid out of Georgia that I think is going into his second year now. Reggie Stevens, kind of a center guard type guy. You know, this guy would definitely be a downgrade if Cook was to miss time. And Otis Hudson. But overall, I like what the Bengals have done with their offensive line. And when you flip over to the Cleveland Browns, which I just posted about that this morning, left tackle Joe Thomas. I mean, can we agree this is one of the best young at 27 years old, best left tackles in the league? And by the time it's all said and done, this is a guy that very well, you know, looking down the line, could end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you want me to bet on somebody in the league right now who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, he's a pretty good bet for a guy who's, as you said, still relatively young.
And Alex Mack, Pro Bowl center from, 2010?
Cal, the Steelers, they were thinking about.
This is a guy that is not overly dominant. You don't say, oh, man, that guy is just a dominant center, but he always gets the job done type guy. They have Jason Pinkston going into his second year at left guard. You got to remember that Eric Steinbach was supposed to be their left guard last year, was lost for the season in August with a back injury, so Pinkston was thrust into the starting lineup last year as a left guard. He struggled, without having any of that off-season work because of the lockout and everything that went along with that. So I can't see him going anywhere but up from his performance last year. They also drafted Mitchell Schwartz, the kid out of Cal, he's going to give them some stability there. When you look back at what the Browns went through at right tackle last year, even if Schwartz has a few growing pains here, I think Joe Thomas came out this offseason and said, this kid's a more of a technician than I am. And Joe Thomas, if there's, you know, you want to describe an offensive lineman who's a technician, it's Joe Thomas. So those are positive things there. Their only real hole I see is Sean Lebao, their right guard. Really, really suspect. He really, really needs to step up his game. When you look at their depth, though, their depth is a concern. And you know, you can go around every offensive line in the National Football League, and depth's, you know, going to be a concern in certain areas. But they have a lot of guys without a lot of experience, especially if O'Neal Cousins, the former Baltimore Ravens tackle, does not make their 53-man roster. He's about the only one there with experience. They traded for center guard John Greco last offseason. He's a step down from Alex Mack, though, and they're struggling for depth there as well. That, you know, and thus my thoughts on Mack starts. Kind of a swing tackle for them, maybe depth-wise, if he doesn't sign with the Steelers there. But, you know, when you look at the Steelers' offensive line, there's one thing that they do have, though, or it appears to have, and that's some depth on the offensive line. When you have have Ligursky, Ramon Foster, I guess you could throw Jonathan Scott as a guy that's got NFL experience in there. On top of it, you got Trey Essex in there. Especially if you bring back Starks, at least they would, in my opinion, and people are going to think this is biased probably, but in my opinion, the Steelers probably have the best depth at on the offensive line in the AFC North.
Yeah, as you said, they're going to, if they're going to have the young kids start and they're there, they're going to have a lot of guys with NFL experience backing them up. So that's, as you say, that's a huge positive.
Absolutely. And, you know, that concludes, you know, my look at all three teams around there. All three of those posts should be easy to find on SteelersDepot.com as well.
Okay, good enough. Dave, the other thing, you know, this Jaworski thing has been interesting. You know, I like Jaws. I think he does really good film analysis. And when he's talking about quarterbacks, I pay attention. I think he's really got insightful things to say. I hope they put this together as a series where you could sit down and watch it for a couple hours. But I haven't seen them all. But we're getting down to brass tacks here as we get into the final names coming into camp. And I did see the Philip Rivers one. I think he went at 8, and that was really good. Flacco was at 9. And I guess you and I didn't figure out exactly who was 7 on that list. But Ben checked in at 6. I guess we could probably figure out pretty quickly who was 7. But we do know who the 5, maybe Rivers actually was 7. But the 5 guys in front of him, no surprise at Brady, Breeze, and Rodgers. And I don't think any surprise at Peyton coming off the injury. But maybe if you were going to quibble with one guy, or at least to have a conversation about one guy, it would be Eli. And I've never thought Ben was the best quarterback in the NFL, but I thought Ben was a great quarterback, and yeah, certainly a quarterback I love to have on the Steeler team. I've never been an Eli fan, and I've always thought he was a bit overrated. But I, you know, have to kind of, you know, eat a little crow for his performance this past season. A little bit up and down in the first half, but obviously the rest of the way and in the playoffs, excellent.
And, you know, I looked at my latest post on that was centered around Joe Flacco, how Jaworski claiming that you know, arm strength is underrated, and he cites it. Joe Flacco has one of the best or the strongest arm in the league. My only issue with that is, okay, so he very well could have the strongest arm in the league. Jaworski points to that he can attack all areas of the field at any point in the game. But I broke down his completion percentages along with a few of the other top quarterbacks over the past 3 years. And 28% completion percentage over 3 years of balls thrown 21 yards or more. That's not good based on the quarterbacks that I compared them to. You look at Ben Roethlisberger, 37%. Tom Brady, 31%. Of course, Brady does not make a lot of the long throws. Eli Manning, and this is going to argue your thoughts on Manning, a 39% completion percentage on balls thrown over 21 yards over the last 3 seasons. So,
what was Ben's number?
Ben was 37%.
Yep. So pretty similar.
So, you know, Ben,
do you know who the league leader was?
I've got it. Well, Aaron Rodgers, 40%, Drew Brees, 48%, David.
Damn. You know, and that's what, you know, that has always been the thing about Drew Brees. People were worried about his height, and you can look at, you know, and this is going to be, Dave, this is a guy, Russell Wilson. I haven't heard a lot out of Seattle, but I've heard a lot out of Miami about the quarterback stuff and how Tannehill really is certainly the third guy on the depth chart and will not be starting opening day, maybe not see the field this year. Haven't heard a lot about Russell Wilson, but kind of the same profile coming out of college, a big arm and really accurate, but a smaller guy. Now, I think he might actually have a bigger arm than Brees, because Drew is known as being incredibly accurate, but not the biggest arm in the league, but certainly an adequate arm, and certainly for a guy his size, his accuracy carried the day for him. It'll be interesting to see if Russell Wilson has any of that and how that plays out.
And I think Jaworski underrates accuracy, and or at least he didn't convey that in his piece and all like that when talking about Flacco. And I'm with you on Russell Wilson. You know, if this is a guy that's heady and can understand the game, can catch up with the speed at the next level, if he can make the throws, that's one thing. I mean, it's one thing to be able to attack an area, but it's another thing to complete it. Now, of course, you know, one thing that, you know, your receivers have a lot to do with it, you know, gaining separation, and that's one thing that my stats lack is, okay, how open was a receiver? How many drops did a receiver have? And that's why it's hard to also figure into this post that I have, the yards after, you know, the yards per attempt, because yards after catch plays such a huge role in yards per attempt. If you don't have the raw stats of you know, the distance that the ball was completed in. But I think Flacco and our, you know, Casey Joyner, I don't know if you read the piece on ESPN Insider about the overrated players especially in the AFC North, he lists Flacco as an overrated player because of that very thing with his accuracy and the deep ball. So, you know, is Flacco a good quarterback? Yes, but I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I think his number 9 rating is fair by Jaworski. I just did not like Jaworski's defense of him only being that he's one of the strongest arm quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that means he can make all the throws. And as you said, you know, can he make all the throws well? And, you know, we saw Troy Smith. He's got a big arm, too. He's not in the league. So at the end of the day, it's about performance. And you know, I think that's the question. I think the thing people were kind of laughing at was, you know, who might have been in there at 7 or 8, by the way, is Jay Cutler. But speaking of big arms. But, yeah, like guys like Matthew Stafford and a couple of the other young guys were maybe Cam Newton ranked, you know, behind Flacco. And I don't know if I'm playing a game tomorrow. I'm pretty sure I'm taking both those guys ahead of Flacco.
Which two?
Stafford and Cam Newton.
Wow. I like what Stafford's done. Cam Newton. You know, you remember, I was real down on him, but he showed the ability to throw the deep ball last year. I didn't compile his numbers into my post, and I'll be interested to look at, but it's only one season's worth of work. They're doing it for 3, and we'll talk there. But I don't know if I'd take Cam Newton over Flacco, but I'd probably take Stafford over Flacco.
Yep. Well, I'm definitely taking Stafford. Okay, Dave, any other topics we want to hit on here? The NFL replay one was interesting. They come out with the announcement that fans are going to be able to see the same replay now that the officials see under the hood. And I guess my response to you when you mentioned this was, weren't we seeing that already? What camera angles are they showing them that they're not showing the fans? So I guess that would be my response.
Yeah, and it's all about you know, adding to my understanding, it's all about adding to the fan experience in the stadium, because let's face it, now, you know, now with all the things that we have with the, you know, with the All-22 look, with things that you can get at home, the coverage on TV and the angles that you get on there and the NBC see it and all like that. I think they're just trying to up the fan experience, and I'm going to have to research if this is more camera angles than what they've been previously shown on TV. I'm with you. It's hard to believe that it seems like we do have almost every angle on TV now, and maybe it's just a thing to start showing it inside the stadium now as opposed to not showing it before that's the new thing here.
Right. Yeah, so it is what it is.
I mean, you go to a lot of games. How is the experience in stadium from a serious fan perspective?
Well, you know, for me, where I sit, I love watching plays develop. You know, we talk about the All-22. Well, where I sit, I'm looking at the All-22. It's like I'm a camera. I sit up high, and I really enjoy that. I enjoy seeing the formations, seeing the whole thing. So from And, I, you know, I think TV gives you the formation when the ball is snapped, but obviously then that's when things change. So that's really – I really enjoy that from a fan thing. The only thing is I wish I could control the scoreboard replays, because I've had damn replay up there after every play. And, of course, they don't do that, and there are a lot of – you know, they try to do it – they try to do a good job on most of the calls that are questioned and stuff like that. But, I, you know, I want a replay up there all the time.
I've made preseason games over the years close to my area here. I haven't in a while, but I don't know the type of person I am. I love to have every ounce of info at my fingertips at any given moment during the game, and I'm not fun to be around with during the games anyway. That's why, you know, I don't care for large crowds either, so thus That limits me going to games on top of it not living in Pittsburgh, of course. But I don't know. With the access I think fans have now with the phones and all like that, you know, you've got everything right at your fingertips. And I think the more that the league does to you know, make it a perk, I guess, to go to the game, the better, because, you know, I think there is some fear that outside of the stadium, there's so much good information and interaction and all, quote unquote, almost like being there, that I think maybe the league is maybe looking at, you know, they loosened up some of these blackout rules too, evidently too. So maybe attendance is, maybe they see some sort of trend there where attendance is falling at NFL stadiums across the league. Of course,
there's no question they are trying to make sure the fan experience is really good. They're trying to get more Wi-Fi in stadiums so people can use their smartphones and devices to watch stuff. I mean, they are putting, you're definitely right. They're worried about attendance dropping. They need that environment to, you know, that sells. You know, people look at the game, and the crowd is part of the game atmosphere, even on television. So, yes, I totally agree with that. And I think the NFL is making it, that is very smart about that, because they need to make sure that they keep people in those stadiums.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's one of the things that they're trying to do, especially with this instant replay, with the view that the referees are seeing underneath the hood in stadium. It's probably nothing new from us sitting at home watching the TV, but, you know, it gives fans one other look. But you have to think, if you're the home team there and you think a call might go against you, you know, are they going to be showing those views up there, especially if they think, I mean, let's face it, the referee's job is to get the call right anyway, regardless of what's shown on the scoreboard. And I think a lot of the worry here plays into some of these worries that some of the major media have with the all 22 views. Hey, we don't want the fan to know too much because they're going to take our jobs.
Yeah, right. So we'll see how that goes. And I, you know, the tape stuff you sent out of the link the other day, hopefully people are getting that, and it's good stuff. Okay, Dave. So I think we're going to have you on, if I'm looking at my calendar for what we got going on today, 5:20 today for people who want to listen live. We'll make sure we tweet that out. And as you can always follow Dave on Twitter, I'm sure you are. And I'll make another pitch here. I think Dave's still rolling at about more than 10 times the Twitter followers than I am. So you clowns who are, you know, following at Steelers Depot and not following at Hammer Speaks, you need to get involved. You can, we've had some questions, and we will definitely on Tuesday hit a lot of the questions that we've gotten. We got some nice comments back about the Hall of Fame. I appreciate those. And, you can hit us up on Twitter, and then you can hit us up on Gmail, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And, Dave, anything else?
Yeah, not a lot happening right now in this dead time and all. And David hit all the Twitter accounts. You can follow the show on iTunes, and download it that way. The TuneIn Radio app updates almost automatically, almost instantly when a show is posted there as well, too. Donations, we thank everybody for the donations via PayPal. David and I appreciate that greatly. If you feel like the need to donate, you can find the link on SteelersDepot.com, or you can just go to PayPal and donate to admin@SteelersDepot.com. And we'll be back on Tuesday, and as we inch ever closer to training camps.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.